Hello, listeners to the Science Witch podcast. This is Angel. We have a special emergency message for all of our listeners out there in light of the recent events to take place and the results of the American election. And we wanted to record this episode, the real quick message out there for y'all as a message of cautious persistence and resilience, and also just connect with all of y'all right now as we prepare ourselves for what we're going to be facing in the next 4 years. And we didn't script this. This is not in any way like a prepared episode. This is just us connecting with you out there in a show of solidarity and hope, because as you know, y'all have heard, and over the last few years, we're all queerdos that believe that science and spirituality are one and the same, and we know there are a lot of y'all out there who also feel the same way. So we're gathered here to speak to what we're experiencing and also to share and connect.
My cat says hi. I don't know if the mic picked that up.
Oh, it
He's
did that
being
time.
A little squeaky.
Yay for all of the familiars, man. Yeah. Go hug your familiars,
he's,
y'all.
He's supporting me.
I wonder if we could start with just like a really brief check-in, if y'all would be interested with that. Just how are we doing now? It's only been really 1 day since the results came in. I don't know if that's too tender right now to go into there, but if not, what do y'all think?
Well, it's hard to give a message of hope and then be honest and say I'm not doing great.
So, on the bright side, Zoe Zephyr's reelected.
Remind listeners who Zoe Zephyr is for...
She represents District 100 of Missoula, Montana. She is the first openly transgender member of the Montana State House. She is a phenomenal voice, and frankly, more of us should be listening to people like her. And we also do have our first transgender member of the U.S. Congress. Yeah. I can't remember her
Sarah
name at the
McBride.
Moment, but she's from... Yeah, Sarah McBride from Delaware, yes. Mm-hmm. And also, the one other silver lining that Montana... that came out of Montana is we enshrined a constitutional right to an abortion.
So did Arizona.
Fuck yeah.
We lost that... in Florida, they weren't even going for constitutional right to an abortion, but just trying to claw back a little bit of the disaster down there. And no good news came out of Florida, unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, it's Florida. I don't want to shit on anyone who lives in Florida, but it's just... it's tough down there, I think.
Yeah.
You know, yeah... Montana also just lost its one other Democratic senator that we've had since 2006, John Tester, to a real estate developer.
Amazing.
From out of state. Actually, now all of Montana's representation is from people who were not born or lived in Montana for longer than 10 years.
The Republicans won across the board, even in races where it was already predicted. Like Ted Cruz held on to his fucking Senate seat, which just like baffles me. Like, why would you vote for this, the most despicable politician?
Fucking Ted Cruz.
But that's true. That there were a lot of people who did vote for this outcome.
They voted for Trump. And we all know that. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And we all know that gerrymandering has been happening for like 100 years. So it's not that there isn't some culpability and there isn't some amount of messing with things to put the odds in your favor.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just, that's almost just baked into the system. I mean, the gerrymandering and voter repression is not, it's not a secret.
It is.
Yeah, my husband's vote was challenged.
Yeah, I was reading about a thing about, like, Pennsylvania, thousands of votes being called into question, and people having to, like, write in or, yeah, I checked mine and make sure it had been accepted, but it's stuff like that, you know, that it makes it easier to, again, tip the odds in your favor if you've got all these checks and balances in place, quote unquote, that are really just ways to make sure that the outcome goes.
Yeah, it does seem like probably as much energy goes into just rigging the system in favor for one side or the other as it does trying to get actual voters to vote for people.
Right. Not to just like make this whole thing into a big soapbox argument, but the whole electoral college is bad. And I think most of us know that. And I think most of us were saying it 8 years ago when Trump got elected the first time. There's no reason to have it.
Before we even like talk about the electoral college, let's talk a little bit about demographics. I'm sourcing RSA Mastery here, but if you break down who voted for whom by gender normative titles and by race, 6 out of 10 white men voted for Donald Trump. 1 out of 2 white women voted for Trump. Yeah. And 50%. It was 87% of black women voted for Kamala Harris. It very similarly reflected across black men. I think it was around 55% of Hispanic men voted for Trump. About 50% of Hispanic women also voted for Trump.
My partner and I, she has like Hispanic ancestry, and she's been talking about the historic way that like in the World War II, Hispanic people were like conveniently counted as white people for the purposes of benefiting the white supremacy, basically, or like so that they could have workers who weren't being discriminated against like black people were. My partner was saying, like, this is the culmination of that. Like, all of the integrating, basically that message of, like, integrate or die, count yourself as white, has culminated in this. And this big strongman persona thing that Trump has.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, the demographics on that get a little strange because there are a lot of Hispanic people who are white. They identify as white. They present as white, but they have Hispanic challenging. That trying to figure out exactly what those numbers mean can be really challenging.
Right, because the whole concept is fucked from the beginning.
Exactly.
The mixed message of are you Latin or are you white, and then all of the like sort of trickle down, whatever you want to call it, like effects of making people decide, are you this or are you that?
Right.
When white people created the idea of whiteness and race in the first place.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I think I myself was also surprised, and I think a lot of people were, by last minute people associated with the Trump campaign being able to call Puerto Rico what it, like, say what it did about Puerto Rico. But again, I mean, and the fact that that didn't maybe cost them a bigger blow in the Latino community. Mm. But again, the Latino community, the Hispanic community is large and diverse. And there are plenty of Latinos who don't like Puerto Rico. And there are plenty of upper class Latinos who don't associate at all with like immigrant populations who are going to be more hit here. It's almost like it's all a random human construct just made to control the power structure.
It's almost like it's a contract, and it's almost like the whole thing is class warfare and not actually anything else.
Is this making having a child in the states where there are abortion bans more dangerous than just about any other thing and activity you can do in the United States? And we see this continuing to play out in horrific ways, especially in Texas.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's...
Yeah.
I talk about my abortion experience in a special episode that You're Wrong About did, where they collected listeners' abortion stories, and mine actually got selected. And I talk about how in 2004, I had an abortion in Texas, and I couldn't do that now.
Mm-hmm.
And that just fucking boggles my mind that 20 years ago, I had more rights than femme people who can be pregnant without, against their will, have now. And that is just a terrifying thing. And my brother, you know, he and his wife were trying for a child, but now he has decided that that is not something he wants to do anymore, because if there's any sort of complications, he can't get any care for that in mm-hmm. Louisiana. And so this election, it is definitely starting to draw lines in the sand.
Playing right into their hands. Like,
mm-hmm.
white supremacists, the authorities, whatever label you want to put on people, they want us to be afraid. We live in a fear-based society.
Yeah.
And we have for 24 years at least. If we want to kind of, like, talk about messages of hope or whatever, my partner and I have kind of created a little queerdo space where we have, like, a group for locals who are neurodiverse and queer, and we meet up at least a couple times a month and build spaces like that to not feel alone.
I mean, that's the magic of the moment, for real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you can't find those people locally, then find those people online. But, like, hang around those people in a big way on a regular basis, because that will be your sanity. If you don't have those people, then it will be harder to keep your sanity.
Yeah.
And we have a Discord community for y'all to connect with other folks. But right now, that's, I think, the really important work of just connecting one another, so we're not isolated, so we're not forgotten, so that if something happens to one of us, the rest of us know. And that's going to be really crucial moving forward, is that we're building these networks of care and connection, because no matter where we are, we at least have the benefit of having the internet to connect us and find, if you live in places like Inku is saying, where the overculture is very hostile to people like us, like, having this connections and network is going to be crucial to surviving the next 4 years. Because, like, I live on the West Coast. I have kind of built a little bit of an echo chamber around me, where none of the people that I know that I'm friends with and associate voted for Trump. None of them did.
Right.
And to have had this, really just, it was so out of my, you know, concept that people would vote for him. And that's why I think it was so hard for so many of us, especially those of us who are fortunate, you know, enough to be in these kind of echo, maybe not even fortunate, but just privileged enough to be in these echo chambers, because those of y'all who, like, live out in the places where it's, like, openly hostile, you knew that this was probably going to be the result. And that's why I think it's just been so devastating, because it just didn't, I couldn't fathom folks that would still want someone so bigoted and racist and hateful and just always about grievances, nothing about policy. But, you know, again, that's because I was privileged enough to live in this echo chamber, and now it's like, I understand that the work here is that we keep the signal going. that we connect people, that we share resources, that we continue sharing our voice and connecting the people out there that know that even if you do have to like go back in the closet, even if you do have to go back to using your dead name, you still have people that hold space for you to be your true self. And I know like that's just something I want to send out right now to everybody out there listening.
I think I have a little bit of privileged position, whatever that means, that living in Arizona is kind of like a purple state, and especially in the Phoenix metro area, like it's pretty diverse, and I don't yet feel like neighbors are going to throw bricks through my window for having a rainbow flag and things like that. I don't really think it's going to happen the way that people are afraid that they're just going to lose everything.
Well, maybe not for queer people, but for migrants. I mean, they've already started setting up. They've already had the infrastructure.
Sure.
To do this to migrant people. And that's, I think, the population that we need to really hold space around is our undocumented loved ones and community members, because they're going to be the ones that this, you know, administration has spent this last whole like few months on the campaign trail demonizing and using all the vitriol and lies they could to force all of these scared white people to vote for him.
We need to hold space for our disabled community as well.
Yes,
because Jesus fucking Christ, it's not just the people of color and queer people that they've been after. They've been gunning for the Affordable Care Act since its inception.
Well, I don't think they're going to repeal the ADA. You know, ADA goes back to the 90s. And it would be a really hard sell, I think, especially because I, of course, know and am amongst what I would call younger disabled people. But there are a lot of older disabled people. You either die young or grow old long enough to become disabled. And so it would be really, I think it would be a hard sell to be like, to completely demonize disabled people. However, having said that, obviously there is a lot of rhetoric against the unhoused and various other groups that tend to intersect with disabled people. So I'm not saying we're completely safe, for sure.
I mean, whoever the scapegoat is, right? Like,
right, of course.
These types of political movements, they run on fear, which means they run on scapegoating. And if it's, you know, not undocumented or not, you know, officially documented people today, it's queers tomorrow, it's witches the next day. You know, I think that's why solidarity is so important, really, across the board.
Yeah, I think that's the message, is like, make sure that your safe spaces include disabled people, include minority people of color who are especially in danger at this time. And it's real fucking ironic to, you know, especially a place like Arizona that relies on migrant workers. It's gonna be real funny if they kick them all out and then see what happens to the picking fruit and construction or whatever, these industries that are using those workers.
I mean, we're already seeing that in Florida.
Yeah. You know, if we think about this through the lens of like the Pluto retrograde, right? Mm-hmm. That what the Pluto retrograde does is it drags out all of the open secrets and not open secrets and makes them a big fucking problem. And, you know, the fact is the American economy, when it seems strong, it's largely strong because it is based in really degrading underpaid labor that fuels our entire agricultural industry, our, you know, all basically our entire food system is, and many other systems are, the government turns a blind eye to immigration issues, largely because it's good for capitalists.
It's good for capitalism.
And that was, you know, that was one of the rocky shores that broke up the Bush coalition back in the day, because the white supremacists hated immigrants, but Bush was a good capitalist and knew that we needed people that could be highly exploited. And so, like, I am, you know, I think being pro immigrant and also pro immigrants making a living wage and having safe and healthy working conditions and not papering over the problems in our economy on the backs of sweatshop labor out in the fields, or actual slavery out in the fields.
Actual,
like,
literal slavery.
There was a slavery ring that was broken up actually just a couple of counties away from where I live right now, just a couple of years ago.
Damn.
Like, the Department of Justice came in. The Coalition of Immokalee Workers has been working with the FBI, I think the FBI or some intelligence agencies, for decades, like, uncovering the fact that we still have slavery happening, like, straight up happening. People being locked in warehouses and working to pick the tomatoes that end up in, you know, fast food restaurants under gunpoint. And of course, those are extremes, right? I'm not saying the entire agricultural system is there. But they're extremes that people are shocked about, even though these are their neighbors, right? Like, these workers are literally, like, right down the road. They're going and shopping at Walmart on Sunday afternoon next to people, and they're being trafficked. And and so many of us, you know, I think this is just one instance or one issue of sort of this larger process that we're going under of, like, you know, we just have to get our shit in order. And unfortunately, you know, I think it sometimes can be harder to do that under Democrats, because we tend to just be a little more comfortable under Democrats. And we allow Democrats to do things like engage in genocide in Gaza.
Right.
And all of these things. And like, we can't keep playing that game.
It's
like,
not forgivable.
Campaign tactics that don't fucking work.
And they're also just not good at it, so that makes it easy.
It's blows my fucking mind that, like, the kind of Bernie Sanders phenomenon that happened for a little bit, and, like, Democrats didn't understand why that, like, take a page out of that book. They don't understand why, like, younger generations are really into people like AOC. I don't understand why they keep trying to move center instead of going farther left, which is, like, I think, especially younger generations, like, that's what we're looking for, is someone who's going to be way, way opposite of, like, the hateful rhetoric. And, like, we want strong protections for our endangered communities, and we want
a living wage
and condemnation of the genocide in Gaza, and, like, right. we don't want you to, like, tiptoe towards the center and try to grab as many fence-sitting people as possible.
Arguably, the Democratic Party isn't a left party. They're not tiptoeing towards the center. They're tiptoeing towards the right.
You're absolutely correct.
Like, the reason they don't tiptoe towards the left is because there's a lot more of a voter base on the right. So in order to attempt to get those votes,
it won't benefit them.
They'll cozy up to them a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It won't. And under capitalism, it won't benefit them. And again, the only warfare is class warfare. If they want to keep their position, then they're going to move with that crowd to do. They don't actually want to give us rights. They don't actually want to give us a living wage, like you're saying. They want to keep their position. That's all they can do.
Right. They want to keep their power. Yeah. And this just shows how the large American population has been conditioned and fed this propaganda to vote against their own self-interests.
Yeah. Well,
and we're seeing this over and over again, especially in the South, where they all went for Trump, even though Florida has had two catastrophic hurricanes.
And he
a
was
lot
so
of the places
flippant.
There's another hurricane on the way to New Orleans. Yeah. Well, he doesn't believe climate change is real. And if it is real, it's just going to give you more beachside property.
Climate change not being real has been a Republican talking point since Gore v. Bush. You know, like when Al Gore made climate change his stance, the Republicans had to be like, it's not real, which is mind-blowing and very anger-inducing for me that, like...
But that just shows you how this entire voting works. Population has... basically enabled people to vote against their self interests and livelihoods, because all of these Gulf Coast states that are voting against any kind of progressive environmental regulations or politicians that will do something about climate change,
voting
while
their own
they are being the ones that are massively impacted by climate change.
But what you're saying about Democrats tiptoeing towards the right, basically. Everyone who was no more happy or specifically angry at Harris for not condemning genocide and whatever else they were angry about in her policies and voted third party or didn't vote. If you want a third party option, we have to start making it happen now. Like, you can't
wait.
And we
have to start making it happen at a lower level than just the presidency.
You can't wait until the 2028 election and want some third-party candidate to magically appear. They have to make a groundswell start now. Like, we can't wait. And I can't say that strongly enough. People who are like, both options are bad, you're right. The people who don't want to keep feeding into this system, you're right. But we have to start making moves now. We can't, like, sit... I mean, I know we're all stunned and traumatized and all of that. And I really took issue with someone an Instagram post that I saw where someone was saying, oh, I saw that people became more complacent or whatever under Biden. Let's just remember that Biden walked in with a pandemic. Like, we were traumatized by 4 years of Trump. We were traumatized by a year of pandemic. And then Biden took office. And we were like, we're traumatized. We need a fucking break. And we're all sheltering in our homes. And we're scared and we're upset. And I just want to remind us all that, like, it's okay to go to therapy and admit that you're traumatized by the pandemic. We all, like, tried to just... breathe and put it in the past and act like it didn't happen, but it just happened like 2 years ago, and we're still getting our COVID boosters and we're still like checking to see about the next variant. Like, it's very much not in the past. And so, yeah, all I'm saying is that, like, don't feel bad or whatever. I sometimes feel bad because of my disability that I'm not, like, physically putting myself on the line going to protest the way some of my other friends are. I have to just do something else instead, like phone bank or whatever it is. But, like, don't feel bad if, like, there's something that you can't do because you've got people at home to protect and you can't put your body on the line. Like, not everybody can do that.
Yeah. I think the message that we want to convey here is of wary tenacity, that we're not going to stop doing this podcast. In fact, we're going to do this podcast even harder now, to quote Michael from The Office. You know, we're going to do this podcast even harder as a way to both connect all of our fellow queers and radicals and people who believe that a better world is possible, a better world where our values as wanting to protect our trans loved ones and our ability to have and access gender-affirming care and bodily autonomy, that we still exist out there and we need to stay connected and we need to take care of each other. We need to share information and we need to start building a coalition that will allow us to have the ability to enact this, because at this point we don't really have another choice. And I mean, the one thing that we can say is that the Trump administration is going to be filled with a lot of incompetent people that aren't going to be able to get things done, that there is going to be a lot of resistance, especially from career people in the government who have already had to deal with this shit before. Mm-hmm. And at least at this point, we know now what to expect. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that will happen is there's going to be a lot of infighting in this new administration. Yeah. There's going to be, because the Sith always turn on each
other, right?
And they are going to try to like out racist each other and out misogynize each other. And
well, but also it's just going like trying to keep their position of power, like you're saying.
Right.
Like some people are going to hold their ground and say, no, I'm not going to do whatever the thing that Trump wants them to do because it conflicts with their own interests, or I hate to say their own morals. Like, who knows how many of them have some semblance of morals, but it's not going to be easy, like you're saying, for them to just dismantle everything. Like, my dad was like, oh, believe in the system, believe. And I was like, yeah, but Dad, the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. They overturned some other stuff. I don't want to say something incorrect, but on the one hand, it's hard to believe in the system. Trump is a wannabe dictator. It's hard to believe that everything isn't going to just collapse and he'll just have the dictatorship that he wants. But I don't know, too big to fail. States' rights.
Well, it's giving us our tower moment as a country.
Right.
And the thing about the tower is that it fucking sucks being in the rubble, but it's necessary for it to be destroyed so we can build something better. Mm-hmm. And I think that'll be what happens. This administration built on grievance and hatred and bigotry, it's going to cannibalize itself, just like, you know, eventually happens when you have this much cognitive dissonance and fear and anger and all of the worst human impulses in a government setting. It's going to collapse in on itself, and that will be our opportunity to rise from the rubble.
Yeah.
Especially if you own property or you have some kind of privilege, hang on to that. And if you have to put on a bland face and smile to your neighbors and pretend that you're just like them, do it, obviously. But have community as well. And build those spaces that are queerdos who are politically minded, that maybe have connections to local, you know, the things we're saying, like, find your local candidates who maybe are that third party that you're looking for, who can get into your local state governments, city governments, or whatever, that can rise and create change, because we're not getting it otherwise. If you don't start local, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least now we have even more reason to throw all the shade at Elon Musk. I mean, who had Elon Musk becoming a probable cabinet pick on our, you know, 2020s bingo? What the hell?
He's already the largest government contracted individual in the United States.
Yeah.
Fucking SpaceX.
Yep. And after the election, his wealth went up by like $2 billion. Like immediately after the election was called, his supposed wealth, which of course is also just a shell game. It's just all of this wealth is just smoke and mirrors and shares and different companies and bundling stuff together behind the scenes. It's not an actual like, you know, budget that normal people have.
Just like Trump's wealth was fake, and as we said, he filed for bankruptcy 4 times.
Money isn't real.
But what Trump wants more than anything else is cronies. It doesn't matter who they are. He just wants yes men. So it surprises me 0% that he would consider Elon Musk for a cabinet position, because all he wants is people who will kiss his ring or whatever.
I mean, I guess my biggest hope is just that this will, that this turn of events will make, like I was saying before, kind of, you know, all of the toxic, cancerous parts, big parts of our institutions, so cartoonishly obvious that when it does all come crumbling down, we know how to rebuild better, like, for real.
Yeah, I mean, I think we know from Trump's last administration that, like, they dismantled a lot of regulations, and probably more of that will happen. And I hope it fucking falls on their own heads. I hope it bites them in the ass in a big way. They're like, oh, we didn't fill this cabinet position. We didn't take care of this, whatever it is. And then it bites them in the ass.
And one thing we didn't touch on, but I think it is important for us to focus on humanity and the vulnerable communities, but also the Earth is our mother and we must defend her. And they are going to do whatever they can to try and kill her.
Right.
So yeah, it's get out in your gardens with your people and
leave the leaves.
Leave the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
In the next, coming years, hopefully we'll still be able to do this podcast. We're going to do episodes on networking and connected communities, both spiritually and in solidarity. You know, a lot of good stuff on plants, homesteading, growing your own crops. We're going to try to survive all this together. And hopefully, as long as we could still have a voice and the ability to put out these podcasts, we could stay connected and help each other survive the next 4 years. All right, y'all. Well, thank you for listening to this emergency message. I hope y'all found, a little bit of solace, a little bit of inspiration, and a little bit of reason to stay connected. Again, our Discord is open. Come check us out. I'll put a link in the show notes. And, until next time, live long.
And prosper.
And blessed
be.
Yay!